This is episode number 72 with Stefan Lovegrove. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Well, hello, my friends, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. How are you today? I really hope that you're doing amazing. You know, this year has been so incredibly in flow, which is a huge shift from what my 2019 was like. Now, I'm going to be sharing more about my story of the dark night of the soul that I had last year, where I was struggling to even want to be on the planet. Now, I know that sounds super dark, but it was truly a blessing. And I'm going to be sharing more about that time and what supported me in moving through in the coming weeks on my Instagram. So if you want to know more about that dark night of the soul and what supported me in moving through it, make sure you're following me on Instagram. And that's at I am Stephanie Kwong. Now, I truly believe that through the darkness, it's always an opportunity to build our strength and our spirit. And while it feels really hard as we're going through it, it's our search for the light that has us come home to ourselves. And I have seen so much goodness be inspired through people's challenges that transforms not only themselves, but others as well. And that's something that's happened for me. You know, as I emerged out of the darkness, I got a divine download of a new program that I'm going to be offering at the end of April. Now, this program is called The Reset. And through The Reset, I'm supporting high achievers to learn powerful skills to be able to mentally and emotionally self-regulate in every moment so that they can ditch the stress, the anxiety, and burnout and be able to achieve greater levels of success from a place of calm, presence, and ease. And I realize that so many people talk about mindset and belief change work. I mean, myself included, since that's the work that I'm currently doing with my clients through hypnosis and coaching. However, no one's really showing the incredible tools to create calm and peace immediately in the moment for high performers. And we're such a stressed out culture, and it's taking a toll on our health, on our relationships, and our overall happiness and fulfillment in life. So this is my mission now. To teach these powerful tools to manage our thoughts and feelings, along with doing belief change work, and of course, self-love, because our world needs this. Now, it makes so much sense now why I coached inside of a residential treatment center for 5 years, supporting women who had borderline personality disorder, bipolar, and other mood disorders, and why I was coaching at two addiction rehabs doing the same thing. And when I was there, you know, I learned so much that I'm also adding into the mix to support the clients of The Reset, and I'm bringing in amazing practices through the mind, through the body and spirit, including brain and heart coherence tools to calm the nervous system so that my clients can experience better health, have more fulfilling relationships, improve performance, improve clarity, have better decision-making, and access their intuition. So if you're a high performer and you're ready to cut the stress, the anxiety, high functioning depression, or overwhelm, and you're ready to feel in control of how you feel in each moment, make sure you get on the list to be alerted when we release all the details and open up registration for The Reset that's launching at the end of April. So to get on this list, shoot an email over to support@stephaniekwong.com with The Reset in the subject, and we'll make sure to put you on the list. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our guest today. I've got the inspiring and super magnetic Stefan Lovegrove. He's best known as America's Life Coach, who has worked with celebrities and high-level people to help them to get to their next level. And he's had his work featured on the Oprah Network, MTV, and Fox. And today, he's here to share his own transformational journey from an unconventional childhood growing up as a gay kid in what he describes as a fundamentalist religious cult. Now, Stefan shares the struggles that he faced in questioning the belief system he grew up with and how he succeeded in opening his heart and mind to the idea that people are able to find love, truth, and power outside of God and religion. But as you'll hear Stefan say, you know, a starting point is just a starting point. It doesn't have to define who you are. So if you sometimes feel like events from your past are holding you back, Stefan is here to give you a wonderful reminder that you have way more control over your future than you might think. And some of the things that we chat about in this episode are why you don't have to let your past define you, the importance of building a belief system that's true for you, why what you say you want must align with the image you have of yourself, the perfect time of day to connect with your inner self, how to find the right vibrational practices to support you as you recreate and redefine your inner storyline, the one thing that so many in the personal growth world are getting wrong, how to tell the difference between intuition and ego, and of course, so much more. You know, I absolutely loved hearing about Stefan's take on identifying both universal truths and our own personal identity truths as we move closer to figuring out who we really are. So again, if you've been letting life events from your past, your inner narrative, or even other people define who you are and where you're going, this episode will give you the motivation you need to break free of the things that have been holding you back. And Stefan will show you how to redefine your storyline for more love, abundance, success, and to call in everything that you can dream up. All right, are you ready? Here we go with Stefan. Stefan Lovegrove, America's Life Coach. Thank you for being here on the Rise Higher podcast.
I am here, and I just want to let them know that it smells like Palo Santo, and it's just, I want you to feel the aroma, imagine the aroma here with us, because it is just so good, and we're feeling great.
It is so good. I made sure I burned that for you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm an incense person myself, and sometimes people come over and are like, are you a 90s child? Like, who is still burning incense? But I like something in the air that Jordan Bach, who I know you have interviewed, he always talks about the incense activates the space, and so that's, I think, what we've done
that's
with the Palo Santo today.
Activated it. So this is going to be a powerful episode because the space is activated.
That's the reason. We don't have any power in and of ourselves, but whatever we burned. No, but I have a good feeling. It's going to be a good episode.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being here. And I know you have a really powerful story of where you started to where you are now, because you, the work you do is so impactful. It's, to me, it feels so graceful and so like eloquent almost in the way that you move people through what's holding them back. And I would love for you to share what your journey has been from where you started to how you became America's Life Coach today.
Yeah. So I think we all have a starting point. And it's tricky to talk about this because in one sense, it doesn't define us, right? Like I never like when people say your past makes you who you are. Well, what does that do for somebody whose past is full of trauma, right? They're basically being told you are trauma. So I don't think your starting point is who you are. It's just that, right? It's a starting point. But it affects how your journey unfolds, because mine is going to be different than yours, is going to be different than another person. So I was raised in what I would really describe as a fundamentalist religious cult. If you've ever seen the musical or the movie Footloose, that's often what I compare it to for people. Huh. Is that little town of Beaumont. We could not listen to any music that had drums in it. We could not dance. All sorts of weird little things like that. And just really a culture of fear. When I look back on my childhood, I was so afraid. And I feel like in doing the healing work that I've done over the years, I've had to give so many hugs to little me, who was just so afraid. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I always say it wasn't just one thing. We were afraid of God, but also afraid of the devil, and afraid of hell, but also sex and money and Hollywood and Democrats and all of these things that my life is full of now. But really, we were afraid of ourselves, right? And there was this deeply ingrained belief that who you were is wrong. And obviously, I had a unique angle growing up as a gay kid and a gay man in the midst of that. But what's interesting is I was just like especially wrong in their belief system for being gay. The truth is, everyone was meant to feel that who they were at the core was very, very wrong. And so how could you not be like a little depressed by that? And how could you not be afraid? And how could you not have a negative outlook on life? So that's what I spent 18 years of life living. And then it's interesting because we come to this turning point in the narrative. And for years, I told the story as I got kicked out of the house. And that's factually true. You know what I mean? That is what happened. That is how it played out. But a coach of mine really helped me kind of rewrite that narrative. And I think that's so key in this process that your podcast is really all about, is how do we tell our stories and how do we shape the narrative of our lives at these turning point moments? And so how I've kind of rewritten that narrative in an empowering way is to see it as I made a choice to be true to myself and to let that path take me where it took me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do I support parents kicking their kids out of the house? No. Do I support us versus them narratives that ostracize people? Absolutely not. But I'm able to see from a different lens that I was being true to myself and making a choice to do so. And I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you, because you were also on a journey to become a pastor.
Yeah. So I, go ahead.
Was that something that you chose, or was it again, just you got kind of indoctrinated into it because your family and just the, where you were, that was the path that you should have taken?
That's a good question. I don't think it was necessarily inferred that I had to be a pastor, but there were a lot of assumptions made over my life. So, it was definitely assumed that I was going to stay in the bubble of fundamentalism. I remember one Christmas we were with an aunt and uncle, and my uncle said, "You better get used to people not liking you because the world does not like us and the world does not like fundamentalists." And I remember even as a kid, and this is where you didn't have to grow up in religion or fundamentalism or a cult to relate to this, where whenever there's a narrative like forced on you or imposed on you, that's mm-hmm. very frustrating. And I remember as a kid thinking, wait a minute, how is that choice made for me? Like, who said that I was going to be in this world? Who said that I was a fundamentalist? I never decided that. Who said that this was my path? So there were certain things assumed. I remember, I don't think I've ever shared this story, but this older man at our church one time like pulled me aside after a service, and he said, basically he was trying to give me a prophetic word, which is like a very religious term. And he was telling me that he just had a vision and I was supposed to be a Bible translator, missionary, and he just knew this is what God wanted for me. And again, here I am sitting there as a kid thinking, well, I do want to help people and do something that helps people, but like, I don't really think that's it. And I kind of want to end up in California and I really want to be on TV. And
how old were you when you're thinking that?
A teenager. And okay. He's telling me this. And I had enough clarity on what I wanted to know. I don't think this has anything to do with what I want. But there were a lot of things inferred. And really, I think what it was for me is I did want to help people. And the only two paths that I had seen of how you did that was religion or the nonprofit sector. And so I didn't know about life coaching. I didn't know about entrepreneurship for good. I didn't know about starting a business that empowered people and any of these things that are so normal for so many of your listeners. And so, you know, I went to college. I started out as a religion major and I thought I'm going to go into some form of ministry because that's what you do if you want to help people. And I just didn't know what paths were available. And I didn't know that I was going to have kind of a big spiritual shift in that process. Mm-hmm. So that just seemed the thing to do, I guess, at the time.
So what had you get kicked out of the house again?
So I was 18 years old. I had come out very like privately, tentatively. I told my mom, who told my dad, which I knew was going to happen, but I just didn't want to have the conversation. So I told my mom, and this was during senior year of high school. And so basically what ended up happening is I knew that I was not going to be able to stay in that world. So they had a college that I was expected to go to. It was very expected that I was going to go to this college. And senior year, I had started the coming out process very, very slowly, gradually, quietly. And I was just aware, if you go to that school, you are not going to make it through 4 years. Mm. And so I just thought, we got to look into other options. And so what's funny is people often assume that the thing that forced me getting kicked out of the house was just my sexuality. And I'm not going to deny that that was a piece of the equation, but it was really beyond that, because we really were in this bubble of your kids have to stay in this world and your kids have to go to this school. And all of these things were just expected. And so I messed all of that up in their narrative. And so there was a Tuesday afternoon. So they let me finish. My dad wanted me to graduate high school and not have that be interrupted. So I had just graduated. I had just got a summer job. And then there was a Tuesday evening and they sat me down and they said, you need to be out of the house by Saturday. And wow. So it was a little bit out of nowhere, because it wasn't like in the midst of a big fight. It wasn't yelling. It wasn't how a lot of people I think would envision it, but it was still very scary. Like, I'm not trying to minimize, it was traumatic.
Yeah.
So I get told on this Tuesday night, you have to give us the key. You need to be out by Saturday. And so that week I had to figure out, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? And the truth is, I have watched now so many classmates, so many kids that I grew up with figuring out how to get out of that world at some point, 18 and up. And though I was not grateful for how that played out at the time and it felt very stressful, I actually am thankful that I got a clean slate and kind of got to press the reset button and start over.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people I went to school with, they did try to go to the college and they did try to stay in the city and they did try to make some of their own choices, but still stay very connected and not be too controversial. And that's a tough tightrope to walk. So mm-hmm. I kind of got a, here's your permission slip. It's not what I wanted at the time, but here was your clean slate, blank slate, start over.
I love it. So when you had to obviously unlearn a lot of things or question the beliefs that were imposed on you, how do you unlearn and recreate the beliefs so that they truly served you and forwarding you in your journey of where you wanted to go?
Yeah, well, I think it's a rebuilding process. And it's interesting because I didn't set out to be the God trauma coach. Like, that is not, I've never branded myself that way. That is not what I set out to do. But what's interesting is I've talked to so many people over the years who have had one belief system fall apart on them, but they've never rebuilt for themselves what is true for you now.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes such a wound, such a separation, such a gap in your experience. And it's tough to know how to process that. And so it's interesting because I was figuring all of this out. And in college, like you said, I was going to go into ministry. And so I started having this evolution of faith. And I'm trying to think of what was my initial gateway drug to that world, if you will. I think, oddly enough, I want to say Iyanla Van Zandt was one of the first.
Love. Her.
For me. So I had a coworker. This is how the universe works. This is such a fun story to me. I had a coworker, and initially I wasn't sure how to feel about her. And I thought, I don't know if I'm going to get along with this coworker. Well, one week she happened to come in that summer. We were working together and she happened to tell me that she had just spent an entire weekend watching OWN between Oprah's Masterclass, Super Soul Sunday, and Eon LaFix My Life. And so because of her, first I started watching Eon LaVan Zant. This is like 2012. And then I started watching Super Soul Sunday. My first one ever was Maya Angelou. What a good first episode, wow. If I do say so
that
myself.
Is a good entry point.
So I start consuming this content and opening my mind and heart to the possibility that there could be truth and power and validity to things outside of the organized religion that I had been brought up with. And I remember hearing Oprah have a conversation with Iyanla about the text, which I now really love, A Course in Miracles, and admitting that the first time she tried to read it, she thought she was going to get struck by lightning for picking it up because it said things that were heresy, you know, big scary word. And so I started opening my mind and heart to the possibility that there might be that God might be outside of the box that I had been taught, that love might be outside of the box, that, you know, that there might be truth outside of the box of what I had been raised in. And in the process of that, I come across and meet Jordan Bach, who was huge for me because I will never forget, we had a conversation and I'm still very much operating in Christianity at the time. And Jordan says to me, I know that we don't necessarily use the same framework or language or tools, but I am sure that we're doing the same work of love. Mm. And I don't think he knew at that exact moment how much my work and my thinking was in an evolution, but it was exactly what I needed to hear at the time because it was true. I was in this inner evolution. And what I needed to know was wherever I ended up, love was going to be there. And yes. I was going to be doing the work of love. And so my beliefs begin to change, and one of the things I figured out is that I had to, you know, if you listen to Oprah much, you'll hear her say again and again and again, this is what I know for sure.
For sure, yep.
And I realized I didn't need a long list. I didn't need to have like a full 66-page document of this is everything that Stefan Lovegrove believes. But I figured out that, like, I needed to know what was true for me on some baseline level. And so to me, it is a rebuilding process where you have to do the work to figure that out. And it is a little bit messy. And it is a process. And it doesn't happen overnight. And you can't just fully leap into somebody else's belief system that doesn't feel true for you. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's a slow unlearning and a gradual relearning. And our beliefs are really subject to change, but it takes some work to do so. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So can you share how you connect to your spirituality now? Like, what does it mean
absolutely.
To you?
So to me, I always say there's three things that I believe in more than anything else, and that is unconditional love, absolute wholeness, and infinite possibility. Mm. So if I had to define my spirituality and what it's like in practice, it's really those three things. So where I begin, and this was the foundation of my belief shift, is where I begin is God is unconditional love. And it actually doesn't matter what language or terms or concepts you use to conceive of it. Certainly not what names or verbiage you call it. What matters is that you understand it's unconditional love. Mm. And one of the deepest influences on my life in this particular realm has been Danielle Randall. She wrote a beautiful book, I Met God in a Nightclub. I highly recommend it. And one of the things I will never forget, one day she said to me, either you believe in unconditional love or you don't. And those words have just rang in my consciousness again and again over the years about so many things. Either it's unconditional love or it's not. Mm-hmm. And the minute that you have a conditional God, you always have the possibility that you're not good enough. I was just talking with a client the other day about if you believe on some, even on a subconscious level, that God could be mad at you, angry with you, upset with you, and therefore decide not to bless you, decide to punish you. And many people live in these awarenesses. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you trust your success? How can you be sure that good things are on the way? How can you possibly be at peace in the success and in the good if at any moment God could decide to mess it all up for you?
Totally.
Right? And so to me, there's this fundamental place we have to start of either God is love or not, and either that love is unconditional or it's not. That's my starting point. Then I move to what God creates is whole, and we are all a creation of the divine. So mm-hmm. absolute wholeness is who you really are. And one of the first things I say to my clients is, I don't see you as a broken thing that's coming to be fixed. I understand there's things we're going to work through and talk through and process, but underneath it all is wholeness. And that is who I believe you are. And that's what we're going to reveal in the work that we do. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's almost when people say I am broken, it's not that, but maybe our thinking patterns might be broken in the sense of they don't really serve us for the truth of who we are, which is a whole being who is unconditionally loved. So that's
right.
Kind of the distinction. I like to pull that apart because many times we so self-identify with things outside of us or these definitions, which are not truly who we are. And that's
right.
The broken thinking.
And, and I am is dangerous.
Totally.
Like, if you have an I am that's not serving you, that's a big deal.
Completely.
Because you can't out-earn, out-hustle, out-work your identity, mm-mm. right? You can't get past who you believe that you are at the core. And so let's, you know, to use a business, common business conversation and just spiritual conversation, when we talk about something like abundance, this is where the wholeness discussion really gets very practical is, I believe the universe is naturally abundant. When you look at nature, the sun is not hustling to exist. The ocean is not constantly efforting to make itself work, right? The trees are not working for abundance. Abundance mm-hmm. is actually natural. And so when you start to understand innate wholeness, it's like that is who we really are. We paint other stuff on top of it. I envision it like we cover it up with this blotchy, nasty paint so that we can't see what's underneath. But underneath it all is still good. And that is so foundational to me. And then that opens the door to infinite possibilities. So those are my three things. That is my spirituality now is unconditional love, absolute wholeness, infinite possibility.
And so I know a big piece of what you do is you create a whole new reality for people, right? And you do such deep work to support people in changing their sense of identity and the way that they show up in the world. Can you share kind of maybe some steps on even how people, because right now I feel like that the conversation about identity is so key. You cannot outperform your identity. You can't outreceive your identity. And that really does rule how the universe bends to you, whether what you create. So I'd love for you to share more about the identity piece.
Yeah. You know, I'll set it up by saying this. I love Dolly Parton so much. And she has these famous quotes. One of her famous quotes is, you can have anything you want if you believe that you can have it. And what's interesting is we all get this in theory, right? Because if you ever watch Disney Channel or any children's programming growing up, somebody told you somewhere along the way to believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. But where's the disconnect then, right? Like, why do we all know this concept, but there's a gap there in our beliefs? And so much of it really does come down to how do you see yourself? And if who you see yourself as is not in alignment with what you say you want, I can tell you what's going to win out every single time.
Totally.
That's why this is so important. And I'm willing to bet, you know, a huge percentage of people listening today probably don't see themselves as people who have money. Mm-hmm. They might have made money, right? But they they still, and I was this way for years in business, they still see themselves as like the broke person that it's going to run out at some point for, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe they've had some success in Hollywood or in entertainment, but they still don't feel like they are that successful star. And so deep down, they're waiting for it to run out, right? They're waiting to be found out. Yep. And so that's why this identity thing is so important. And I once heard it said, I think the woman who said this is named Cindy Trim, she said, if you don't choose your own I ams, you will end up being the victim to other people's you ares.
Woo! Say that again.
Isn't that so powerful? If you don't consciously choose your own I ams, you end up being the victim to other people's you ares. Mm-hmm. And so where I begin with identity is, every single day, I start the day on airplane mode for a plethora of reasons that go beyond identity. But I start the day on airplane mode and I lock in my inner sense of who I am before I let the world speak to me. Mm. And so I don't let the news speak to me. I don't let emails speak to me. I don't let notifications speak to me. I don't even let other content speak to me before I start the day connected to myself, my truth, my spiritual connection, and with an awareness of who I am. And so that's honestly, practically speaking, there's no better time we know to engineer something in your brain than in right after you wake up and right before you go to sleep, yep. in those subconscious
Magic
windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to tap in that place, I think, and begin to choose your identity for yourself. And a lot of people are just not aware of how they really see themselves, right? They're aware that they're chasing a goal. They haven't yet connected who they really see themselves as and how that's holding them back. But this is, I could talk about identity all day. Yeah. I mean, this is such an important conversation. And part of my whole issue looking back on my childhood is teaching people to see themselves as at the core, wicked and evil and broken and horrible. That does not lead to good things in people's lives.
Sure doesn't.
And so anyway, identity is crucial.
So when you're affirming yourself, what if you would give us a sneak peek into what it looks like for you? How do you affirm yourself and what are you affirming yourself with?
Yeah. So I think there's two levels of things. There's the universal ones and then the ones that are very personal to you. So I'll share a very in the moment personal example first. One of the things that I want to do more of in 2020 specifically is more media and more television, right? So I am aware I limit my – I don't just want to say I limit the opportunities for that. I limit – how much I even let myself access that vibrationally when I just see myself as an entrepreneur. And these are all parts of me, right? Like the CEO is a part of me. The coach is a part of me. The business owner is a part of me. Mm-hmm. But I'm aware that I don't fully access what I need to access vibrationally when I just see myself from the entrepreneur lens, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, one of the things that's a huge focus of the year is like, who is the star version of me? Mm-hmm. And how do, and I literally have on my calendar every day a time set aside to really sit in that energy. And there's actions I take from that energy, and there's vibrational practices that I do in that energy. So there's things that are going to be personal to you, right? If you are the person who still deep down sees yourself as poor, even though you've made money, one of the things you're going to want to deliberately cultivate is seeing yourself as a wealthy person. And not just even that, like there's a lot of paradigms around rich people that you might have to do some work around because that may not automatically feel good. But one big one I know for me was seeing myself as a good money manager, right? I had a storyline for a long time. It confuses me. It overwhelms me. It stresses me out. I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good with money. Well, that identity was not serving me.
Not at all.
Right?
Yep.
So I had to see myself as, no, wait a minute. I can do this. I'm actually a good money manager. So there's ones that are specific to you. And then there's ones that I just think are relevant for everyone. So knowing that you are in fact love itself in physical form, knowing that you are whole, you know, I know this language doesn't resonate with everybody, but for me, the language of being a child of God deeply resonates with me. So there's some universal ones, there's some personal ones. You got to find the ones that energetically resonate with you, right? And that's what I always say about all practices. The point is the vibration, right? So if it does something to shift you, great. That's one to use. If it does nothing for you, great. Bless it. Move on. Let somebody else have that one, right? But you're going for the things that shift the vibration.
Yep. So those are, just to break it down for the listeners, if there is a statement that you say to yourself that has you feel, let's say, more resonance, right? Heart expanded or a higher vibration, those are the ones to keep. The ones that don't really move the needle, you kind of let those go, right? And are you just affirming yourself of these statements and of the universal ones as well as your personal ones in the morning as you wake up?
So in the morning, I actually have a statement that I have written out on Evernote that's constantly being edited and tweaked.
Yes.
And so it's saved there. So literally I can wake up with my phone on airplane mode. I can open the document and I can read the document. And I've always loved like the powerful declaration of spoken word. You know, there's so many different ways to do it and different things resonate with different people. But I love spoken word. I love like just a powerful declaration. So I read my statement. But I also, here's what I want people to realize. It's deeper than just, I'm going to say it and then I'm done. You know, Danielle, who I referenced earlier, Danielle Randall, she said, the most powerful I am is the one that you become, right? And so, for example, in this journey that I'm very much on of what does it mean for me to be a star, that not everybody listening, not everybody in my life does that resonate with, but it is my journey in the moment, right? It's not just something I'm saying. And then, because here's the thing about identity. If you just say it and then you go back to your default mode of operation.
Totally, it doesn't work.
You didn't shift the identity.
You just canceled it out.
And so you have to figure out what it is. You know, I was in Barry's this morning doing my workout, Barry's bootcamp workout class for those unfamiliar. I'm in Barry's this morning looking at myself in the mirror, like, how does the star work out? Mm-hmm. Right? It's those kind of questions that you have to be in conversation with yourself about identity is not just I said it once and now I'm done, but okay. So if you were showing up as the CEO, what would the CEO version of you, what decision would they make right now? You have to let the identity work in your life and not just be something you say and then you go back to the old way of being, right? Because that's what we're talking about. Yep. A new I am that works is a new way of being.
And it's aligning everything, not just what you're saying, but how the decisions that you're making aligns with what you say, who you are, or the one that you're becoming, and also your actions, which I'm so curious how a star rides. What's that? What's the woman who her class started on Friday? You paid double tickets?
Angela Davis.
I've been dying to hear about it. Maybe we could catch up about that later, but.
Well, you know what's funny is the Oprah instinct that's like, if you love something, share it, because the only way things expand is when we share them. Yeah. I have that thing. And I will talk about anything in my life that's working for me, anything that I love. Mm-hmm. I know it's not for everyone, but I will sell it to you like I get commissions, whether or not I do. Because, you know what I mean? Because it's like, if it works for me, I'm happy to share it. And maybe that's the like cult evangelist from my childhood still in me. I don't know. But, you know, that's a good example of you got to find people that speak to you and speak to you in the process of who you're becoming and the season that you're in. One of the things that I do think I do really well is it changes by the seasons of my life, but I check in with myself and I find a few voices that are really speaking to me in the season that I'm in right now. And I stay connected to those voices and then I shut out most other voices. And one of the reasons I think so many people online get so confused is you're letting anybody speak into your business, speak into your career, speak into your life. And frankly, whether or not they have a bank account you want, whether or not they have the results, whether or not they're anything like you or your path or how you're wired, you're just letting anyone speak into your life as an authority. And of course you're overwhelmed. And of course you're confused. And of course you're hearing contradictory things. So Angela Davis is a fitness coach and instructor in LA who I found through Oprah in college and then obviously ending up in LA, found her again in 2016. And she just spoke to a destiny part of me is really the best way that I can say it. And you, we all know this, like there are people online, there are coaches, there are mentors, and they just speak to the destiny part of you.
Yes.
And that, to me, that is the deepest level of support. There are people I can learn a tool from or a strategy from that don't have to like connect on that level. But somebody that's really going to support me at the deepest level, you got to speak to the destiny part of me. And so Angela was one of those people. And so literally when I lived in Orange County, I would drive an hour and a half. The shorter commute way was an hour and a half. And then the longer drive on the way home over 2 hours. But I would literally get up at 4:30 in the morning, drive to Angela 6 a.m., probably 4 days a week for almost all of 2016. Because I needed to be in the room. And that was a voice that was speaking to me at the time. And so every season looks different. Every identity looks different. Every person's journey is different. But you have to find the voices that resonate with you and keep them in your life.
Yeah.
And so I had a break from Angela because she wasn't teaching. And now she's back.
She's back.
And so I had to get back to the room.
First class on Friday when she launched her own company. I really want to highlight what you did for people to really get that you did whatever it took to show up, to have her speak into your destiny. And that really shows how your soul was like, no, I'm ready and I will go the distance to do what I need to do to become who I know myself to be. Because I think so often people just find excuses, really, for why they aren't who they are and they aren't willing to do what you did, which is driving 4 hours almost round trip, 3.5, so that someone could breathe life into the existence of who you knew yourself. And because you couldn't do it on your own at first, you needed someone else, an anchor, to pull you forward. And I really admire that in you. It's so powerful.
And I want to say this. I do believe action doesn't necessarily work just because you're doing something. I think it's important to acknowledge this. I could get in the car and, you know, drive 500 miles and be the completely wrong direction than I wanted to go. And just because I hit the gas pedal and went 70 miles an hour for a few hours doesn't mean that I got somewhere good.
Totally.
Right? So it's not that like you just got to do something, but you do have to be available to do what you are led to do.
Yes.
And, you know, I recently heard T.D. Jakes say there's a verse that not very many people teach, but it says, God causes to prosper that which they did. And he really described this so well, and he did it more eloquently than I am right now. But the concept he was teaching is when you do your part, it does feel like this supernatural thing kicks in. And we've all experienced this where like you showed up and sold and somehow the universe got your post to somebody that should never have been sent it, should never have seen it, should never have been referred, but somehow they got to you. And the day that you were feeling most doubtful, you had this pay in full client sign up. And you know, that's how it feels so much of the time is when you do your part, God does God's part. But it's not about sitting on the couch and being lazy and watching Judge Judy. It's you showing up to do what you're called to do, which more often than not is going to feel out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I started going to Angela, part of the reason it shifted me is I would be in that room with some very powerful people. And I'm processing, like, who am I in this world? And I'm on a bike next to David Beckham or Usher or Tyler Perry or these people doing huge things in the world. And I would be in that room, and it was way out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Not to mention being very physically demanding. But I would show up anyway because I knew that it was what I was supposed to do. And the sense of purpose and excitement that I had allowed me to push through the discomfort. And I think there's a whole lot of people who And I believe in ease. And I believe that struggle and suffering are not the point and not required and all of these things. But I believe there's a lot of people in the personal growth world right now who, when something doesn't feel comfortable, they think it's not aligned. And that could not be more far from the truth. Because often what is very aligned for you in this moment is going to stretch you.
Yeah, is what is uncomfortable. Because
precisely.
That's not in your comfort zone.
Right.
Hence the guys, get out of your comfort zones. Stretch and check into, because I always like to see what's, like for me, intuition is kind of the first voice, right? It's the, hey, go over and then talk to them. And then all of a sudden the second voice is like, eh, they don't really want to talk to you. Or what do you even have to say? Or, oh, you look how you're dressed. And then like stops you, because that's where the discomfort starts to come in. But if you just listen to that first voice when it's like, you know, sign up for this or invest in yourself on that. You can trust yourself on this, whatever it might be. It's like, listen to that and be willing to stretch and take that risk, even though the second voice wants to come in now and tell you that it's not the right thing, that it's uncomfortable.
Right. And we have to know the difference between the voices, mm-hmm. Which is funny because people ask me that question all the time. Like, how could I tell the difference between intuition and ego or intuition and fear? And I always think most people have just not created enough space and stillness to really feel the difference. Because if you're going 100 miles an hour constantly and you never slow down and you never stop and you're never still, it might be hard to really feel into that. But I do believe we can feel into that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Danielle Laporte taught me this trick that if you don't know what to do, you can, about a decision, you can lie on the floor and ask the question. And for some reason, just shifting your body in that way, the answer always comes. And I've used that many times over the years. But it's interesting because when it comes to those voices, there is a way to invest in yourself coming from fear, coming from lack, coming from a shiny object syndrome, FOMO, not enoughness kind of thing. But you have to know the difference between that. You have to feel the difference between this thing scares me, but I'm also excited and I know it's for me versus this thing is just not for me and feels like a lot of pressure. And it's a very clear difference if you're willing to really check in and feel into it. The ones that are for you, though, I agree. The excitement always comes first. The intuition mm-hmm. always comes first.
Mm-hmm. I know that you really tap into a lot of the universal spiritual principles in your work with people. I would love for you, because I don't talk about that as much on my show, but I would love for you to kind of school the audience on what they are and kind of maybe some of the key ones that really guide your life that have brought you so much fulfillment and abundance and all the good stuff.
Well, here's why I like law and principle. This is the inner geek in me. I'm very well known, I guess. So this reporter has made this clear to me that this should be one of my taglines. And I was like, I do say it a lot. But I say it apparently a lot. The law is the law is the law is the law. And I always say it does not matter whether you prefer, you know, science documentaries or The Real Housewives, or in our case, The Bachelor.
It's on tonight.
It is on tonight. And we are excited.
We are so ready.
But anyway, hashtag not sponsored, hashtag ABC, we may be available though. But anyway, point is, the law is the law is the law. And so the reason I like it is it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't prioritize one person over another. You don't have to get it perfect. You don't have to get it right every time. But the law works across the board. And here's also why I think it's important. You know, a lot of people believe, for example, with money. I love using money as an example of so many of these principles. A lot of people believe that money is an indicator of character, hard work, or skill. And yet, we all know, if we're being intellectually honest, we all know examples in our lives or just in the world where that's not true. Mm-hmm. And so we get triggered by, they're not as good at what I do as I am, and they make more money. Or I don't feel like they're working very hard, but that trust fund kid has so much money. Or like, what about the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world? Not good people, loaded with money. And so what people need to realize is, well, there are laws. And so if they're working with the law when it comes to wealth, it is what it is, mm-hmm. right? And so there are lots of laws and principles I coach from. I think one of my favorites to to talk about is the law of correspondence and the idea that there's always a direct correspondence between your inner world and what's going on outside in the quote-unquote circumstances of your life, right? And to me, those two things are always very linked. We don't always know how they're linked or see that they're linked in the middle of it, but those two things are always, always, always corresponding with one another. And that is why I do work with people on the inner stuff. And then so many things in their life seem to quote unquote magically change. But I'm like, if it feels magical, great, but it's actually not some crazy magic, whatever. It's just law and principle. You changed in your inner world, and your inner world directly corresponds to your life. So it had to change because the law is the law is the law. So that's why I love that stuff, is because anybody can work with it. And I have clients say, I feel like I'm a wizard at Hogwarts now, because it's like, it's so easy to work with when you know what you're doing. And I'm like, right, that's the point. That's why it's so much fun.
Yeah.
The law is the law is the law.
So the law of correspondence, what are some other ones?
So law of vibration,
yep,
it is really the deeper truth to law of attraction, yep, right? Law of vibration says that everything has a frequency, and what you are vibrating at is what you're going to attract a match of. The reason law of vibration is, I think, a deeper truth is law of attraction makes people think there's something outside of themselves that they need or want. Mm-hmm. And so you get focused on, I'm going to attract the mansion, attract the Bugatti. And it's like, that's not the deepest level of work here. So law of vibration is a big one. Another one that is very emphasized in my work is law of cause and effect, mm-hmm, because I like to remind clients that you always have the power at cause. And often we get caught up in trying to fix the effect. And I got this analogy from Marianne Williamson. I love it so much. When you try to force a change by managing effects, it's literally like if you're in a movie theater and you try to attack the screen to change what's on it because you don't like what it's playing. Mm. The only way to get something different showing is to go into the projector room and adjust what movie is on the projector, right? And I literally did a meditation once spontaneously in a mastermind call where I took all of my clients metaphorically into the projector room and like let them feel into changing the film that's in the projector, because that's the only way that you can see something different on the screen of your life. Mm. So law of cause and effect is a big one. One, there's a lot as it pertains to money that I've really explored. And one that I always like to talk about is just the law of circulation, mm-hmm, that what you keep in circulation will continue to be in circulation. And so a lot of times people are worried about losing something and they hold on really tightly, mm-hmm, and stop circulating, mm-hmm, it. And that doesn't work well, whether it comes to love or money or anything else. So, I mean, there's many we could talk about. But the point is, get into the law, you guys.
Stuff. Well, how do people discover, like, how, if they were interested in finding out more and learning more, where would you point them?
Sure. So here's the thing. There's not one comprehensive list that everybody agrees on, right? That's part of the beauty of this is a very open spirituality that doesn't have dogma, mm-hmm, right? So like Deepak Chopra has a book called The Seven Laws of Success. Well, those, yeah, aren't the laws that I limit myself to in coaching. So there's not one place, but there's three resources that I always point people to generally. I literally just did this on Facebook last night to somebody. So The Way of Mastery, mm-hmm, is a very good text to explain how reality works and that you are creating it all. A Course in Miracles, love, of course, I love. I actually read A Course in Miracles before Way of Mastery, but found out that people say the other order usually works better. Like Way of Mastery is a little simpler to understand, I think, for a lot of people. So Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, and then I don't know if you read him or not, but I love the works of Neville Goddard.
Yes.
He's just, talk about someone that actually really makes me feel like, yes, a wizard at Hogwarts. So those are three people that I really say. But here's the other thing. Often when it comes to personal growth, The issue is not what you don't know. It's what you can't see. And this is, I think this is really, I just feel very heavily that this is an aha moment for somebody listening right now, is the most expensive thing in the world, the most dangerous thing in the world is what you can't see, which is only made worse by the fact that you can't see that you can't see it, right? And so for so many of you who feel stuck, the issue is there's something happening energetically that you can't see. And often the problem is not that you don't know the principles. It's that there's somewhere you're not seeing something, and you're probably making an exception to what you know or a separation to what you know, but you can't see it, mm-hmm. right? And so I also say, like, these are resources I love. I read The Way of Mastery almost every day as part of my spiritual practice, or A Course in Miracles. So I love these resources. I recommend them. But also, there really is no substitute for doing the work with people that can help you apply the laws to your life yep. and see what you're not seeing. And I like to say that because I certainly know from experience, sometimes we hide behind books, right? And we don't want to have the scary conversation, so we go read 10 more books.
Totally.
And so if that's you, I get geeking out over the learning. I am 100% there. But don't avoid the conversation that changes your life by reading 15
completely.
More books.
Because books also can't give you feedback.
Well, books, and if you're in hiding, you will even pick books that let you stay in hiding, mm-hmm. right? Whereas a coach will say, no, 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 a good coach will not let you stay in hiding. So I just think that's important to clarify, is like, learn the laws and principles, but most of my clients have a basic understanding of laws and principles by now.
Yeah.
And the reason we're doing the work is because we're applying it to their lives.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I also hear, who am I? People are trying to uncover and discover. I know you went on that journey and you started uncovering that as you were riding along with David Beckham and Usher. What are other ways for people to uncover that big question of who am I?
So earlier in this episode, I was talking about the universal and the personal identity truths.
Yep.
And I think this is so key. Without the universal foundation that resonates with you, the personal stuff is hard to figure out.
Yep.
And this is so important to me because I did not become a coach or start a business as the beginning of my personal development journey. That was years down the road. Mm. I was meditating with ramen in my dorm room. I'm not saying you have to be broke and eat ramen, but I was meditating with ramen in my dorm room just for me. Long before there was any thought of an income generating ROI, anything, right? And so for me, I'll throw out resources that were helpful at the time, but when I was processing the universal narrative of who am I, not just what am I going to do as a career, but on the deepest level of truth, who am I? The Alchemist was huge for me. I still have it on my desk at home on the top right now because it just speaks to me on a very deep universal level of truth. The Alchemist was huge for me. Gary Zukav's Seed of the Soul was big for me in processing that. Marianne Williamson's A Return to Love, huge for me. So if who am I is a big question, I actually think you have to start with the universal. Then you get to get curious about, and how do I get to do this as the unique incarnation of love that I am? What am I here to give? But we have to start with the right questions. You know, ego gets us often lost in asking bullshit questions. I don't know if we're supposed to cuss on this podcast.
That's fine.
But ego gets us asking the wrong questions. And the reason is ego's invested in us staying in seek and do not find.
Yep.
And as long as we're asking the wrong question, we can't get to the right answer. So I think start with the universal, because if you don't believe you're love, that you're whole, that you're a perfect creation of the universe, of the divine, of God, if you don't get clear on the universals, the personal stuff has no foundation. Then you can start exploring the who am I. The good news is when you're actually coming from wholeness, all the clues are there. They're there from when you were little. They're there from what lights you up now. They're there from what comes naturally and effortlessly to you. Like, I think the clues are there. We just have a bunch of stuff in the way that prevents us from paying attention and listening and hearing it, you know?
So your book, everybody go get Stefan's book, How to Find Yourself, Love Yourself, and Be Yourself, which again, guys, go get a copy of it if you want to go deeper. But what's your definition of self-love? Because I know I have my own, everybody's got theirs, but how do you define self-love and how do you show people to really be in more of the embodiment of it?
So this is where I'm going to go back to the unconditional thing. If self-love is about when I have mastered my inner game and I have a perfect six-pack and I've created the life that I want in all ways, I will love myself. That's not worth anything to me. And so to me, as I said before, is it unconditional or is it not, right? That is so fundamental. So to me, what unconditional love looks like in the moment is I am willing to fully and completely love myself just as I am in this moment without judgment. And, you know, this is a whole nother conversation that I probably spent 30 minutes talking with Amanda Bucci about, but in that podcast, but letting go of judgments first and foremost against yourself is like 75% of it, right? Because most people, you have a judgment on your body, you have a judgment on your bank account, you have a judgment on where you are in your career, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so to me, what this whole self-love conversation is about is, what if you, even just for a moment, actually loved yourself unconditionally, which meant you didn't need the conditions to change. You weren't going to withhold your love and you weren't going to judge yourself. You were going to love yourself fully just as you are. That's what I think self-love is really about. And that's what I think changes relationships and changes the world.
I feel like I'm like at church whenever I'm with you. Well, whether it's about media and pop culture to spirituality, I'm like, yes, brother, bring it. It's
which,
so good.
I feel like I'm shouting out people left and right, but this, I really like doing that. Like, yeah. I always tell my clients, be very generous with, give credit, shout always. Out, share what works for you, all the above. But I remember when I was processing ministry, me, and then all this, I remember having a brief conversation with Jordan and him saying that he just owned that when he speaks, it's preaching. And this is Jordan, who grew up Jewish atheist, owning that when he speaks, it's preaching. And he goes, yeah, but if it doesn't have the fear, the guilt, the shame, what's the issue with it? And so what's funny is, like, I really do own now that I can host anything and we will go to church. This is why when I speak at events, I have keys playing behind me. It's because it's like, it doesn't matter. We could be talking about The Bachelor. I'm going to take you to church by the time it's done.
Oh, you do every Monday
night.
That's
what we're doing, you know?
thank you so much for this conversation so far. It's been really, it's beautiful because I've also gotten to know you more through this. And I appreciate that. I've got a few more questions for you to close this,
sure.
this out.
I just want to say I appreciate where this conversation has gone because I feel like we've all done and participated in and listened to so many podcasts now. We all know there's a way to have a predictable conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And man, it's just not that interesting when the questions are like, so this, and now we're going to move to this point. And this has been such a, you never know where it's going to go next. And I just have loved the conversation. So thank you for that.
Thank you. So what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
That's a good question. I feel like my people know most things about me that I would say for this answer. Mm-hmm. But I still think this is surprising about me. I really like country music. And that I feel like people who know me super well are aware of that. But I don't feel like that's expected about me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that.
Well, we know that you're going to... Why am I drawing a blank right now?
Stagecoach.
That's right.
Yes. Well, and here's what I like about that fact is, like, that took me a while to fully own. Of all pieces and parts of me, I owned I was gay and liked men before I owned Stagecoach and Country. Because I had judgments on it. You know what I mean? And we have judgments on so many things, so many parts of us, so many things we like. But that's an interesting fact, I think.
And what do you do to take care of your mental and emotional well-being?
Well, legitimately, for me, moving my body does so much on a daily basis. Angela is an exceptional, like, what she brings mentally for you instructor. But I, you know, one of the things I often say to clients is before we conclude that something is deeply energetically wrong, let's do a quick check about have you eaten? Have you slept? Are you hydrated? Are you breathing? Have you moved your body? Like, have you had fresh air recently or are you stuck in the house for days? Like, we got to take care of the basics. Because I once heard T.D. Jakes say, never trust exhausted emotions. If you're not taking care of the basics, everything else is filtered through a clouded lens. And so it may feel like your business is going to hell in a handbasket, but maybe the issue is that you haven't showered, you've been eating fast food, you haven't slept. And that's actually better news because your business may not be in bad shape. So to me, if I keep moving my body, I have noticed it's hard for energy to get stuck. I might wake up in a weird spot. I might whatever. But if I move, you know, the Friends quote that I've adopted is, when I work out, everything else does, Jen Aniston said once in Friends. And I have made that a mantra for years now. And so I believe it. When I work out, everything else does. And if I move my body, the energy will stay moving.
Are those some of the energetic practices that you use to amplify your mornings with?
Well, I don't always work out in the morning. I'm not, you know, I've tried many, many morning things. I very briefly have tried, like, the people that say you need to move and exercise in the first 20 minutes. Let me tell you, that never lasted for me more than a week. And tomorrow, for example, at the time of the recording, I'm going to Angela at 6:30 p.m. So it's not going to be at all a morning workout. The morning particularly, it's all about energy. One thing I have happening right now is, like, instead of doing the endless snooze, all the things I've promoted for free, honestly, in this podcast, none of these are sponsored, but I'm a big Alexa person. I talk to my Alexa. It's the only pet in my life because I live bi-coastal, whatever. So my Alexa's there everywhere. And so my Alexa has a whole star vibration playlist. And so as soon as I turn an alarm off, instead of snoozing or this, that, the other, Alexa fully goes into the playlist for 30 minutes. And so I usually will cut her off and then get up and get the routine going. But, like, even that is a choice, that after the alarm and I'm up, we go into the vibration of the star musically, and that's something I put in place on purpose. So it's about being on purpose. Your on purpose is not going to look like mine. And I'm wary of any leaders that say it's got to be this way.
Totally.
But figure out your on purpose.
Yeah, I love that. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
10 years old. Number one, that nobody in your life has any understanding or paradigms for your dreams. So beyond you being gay, which we'll get to in a minute, but beyond that, just, like, they don't know what they're talking about Hollywood, about what's possible for you, about money. And so I would say, like, you trust your heart. What your heart says you can have, what your heart says you want, your heart is your friend. And then the number two thing is, I would just say, don't be scared of you, right? Because that's the deepest fear I had, is that who I was. There was a point, I read a whole post about this. There was a point in my life for a couple of years where I literally thought I was so evil and had so internalized it just because I liked boys, that I literally had internalized that I was possibly the Antichrist. Now, that doesn't make sense logically, but that's the level of, like, self-fear and self-hatred I was in at that time. And so I would say to 10-year-old little me, who you are is so okay, who you are is so perfect and lovable just as you are, and there's nothing to be afraid of.
Amen to that. Where can people connect with you?
So I have a confession. I am really having a blast on TikTok at the moment.
Oh!
So I'm going to throw that out there. But the handle is pretty much the same across the board. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, etc. So Dr. Lovegrove, DrLovegrove. Lovegrove really is my last name. People used to ask, or people never asked till I was in LA. And now they ask, is it a stage name? It's not. So Dr. Lovegrove, come say hi. And StephanLovegrove.com, which I will not tell this story today, but was a crazy miracle story. This woman was trying to like intimidate us into paying $20,000 to get the domain name.
What?
And this crazy miracle happened. And one day I woke up and I got an email from GoDaddy.com saying, would you like StephanLovegrove.com for $11.99 with a decimal point
That's
in the middle?
Right.
So StephanLovegrove.com. You can find me there as well.
Is there anything that we can support you with? Or that you want to share also what you're doing?
Actually, you know what? Yes, because the star has a request. So I, like I said, we're focused on TV. I have my first television appearance actually lined up in the next couple days.
Woo!
I'm flying to Texas. We're doing a 10-minute segment airing on NBC before primetime. But my point is, we just want momentum to keep it rolling with our TV and media. So any shares and engagement you can do with those appearances help us lead to the next one and the next one and the next one. And that is a priority for us right now.
You got it.
Happy to ask for
that. You know what? I will definitely be sharing all over as much as I can.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being here.
I feel like they're only getting half the story because they're not going to watch The Bachelor with us. But we left them with a lot of good
stuff.
That's
fine. Well, what we'll have to do is we'll have to get ourselves on the Insta story.
Right. It
Instagram
does happen
story, yeah.
Every Monday night.
It does.
We are watching.
Yeah. So you guys, follow our stories on Instagram.
Yes.
And follow.
You're right.
And you can watch us.
If none of this was a reason to follow, follow for The Bachelor.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love you.
Love you.
And I'll see you in a couple hours again.
Perfect.
If you love this podcast, and I so hope you did, please go ahead and subscribe. That way you'll get real-time updates anytime I post a new episode. And if you're feeling extra generous, go ahead and leave us a review. I will be reading listener reviews at the top of each show, and I would love, love, love to feature yours. And if you want to continue to hang out with me, you can come find me on the interwebs. My website is stephaniekwong.com. And you can subscribe to my newsletter where I send out lots of great teachings for mindset, self-love, and subconscious reprogramming. Also, I've got a free manifestation hypnosis audio that you can download from my website that will get you energetically aligned to attract what you want with greater ease. Also, I spend most of my time on Instagram. You can find me at I am Stephanie Kwong. That's I am StephanieKwong. And we can spend some time there. I check all of my DMs and I'm happy to respond back. If you have any questions or just want to share any thoughts about the podcast, I always love connecting with people over on the Insta DMs. Now, remember, if you want to make sure that you're alerted with all the details when the reset launches, shoot an email over to support@stephaniekwong.com with the reset in the subject, and we'll make sure to put you on the list. Okay, so to close this out, if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it out with them. And if you want to connect with Stefan and to learn more about the work that he does, all the links are in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP72. And of course, you can check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Okay, my friends, until next time, as always, I'm sending you so much love.